Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Geekscapists, welcome to our brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host, and if this is your first Geekscape, well, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. Movies, video games, comic books, TV, all of the pop culture facts and conversation that you can fit under the hood. I've loved doing Geekscape in the 2024. I think we've had two episodes so far, mainly talking about the big comic book releases, right? We had an Aquaman movie over the break. We had this new Marvel series, The What If, which I loved. But that didn't stop those of you who maybe hadn't even watched that stuff to be a part of it. So I've really loved the feedback, either on Facebook or on Twitter or Instagram. We've been doing the Instagram live while we've been recording this. So if you're watching on Instagram, tell me if you dig that or not. And let me know if I don't have to be doing it, right? I just figure there's a lot of people on the Instagram and they're like, oh, Jonathan's going live, and they check out Geekscape. And if you guys want to hear the full episodes, just subscribe on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We're 100% free. And I've been bringing this stuff for 18 years and I've loved it because it's allowed me to meet so many amazing filmmakers. I've got one on the show right now. He's coming up in a bit. His name's Mickey Rapkin. He's a writer. He began as a journalist. He wrote some books. He wrote a little thing called Pitch Perfect. Maybe it became a very successful series of films. We're definitely going to talk about that. And I met him a little over a year ago as he was beginning a foray as a director. He was getting into the director's chair to film a short that is now on the shortlist for an Academy Award for Best Short, and it's called The Anne Frank Gift Shop. Mickey's going to come up and talk to me about it in a bit. But I bring up you guys reaching out to me either on jonathan@geekscape.net or through the DMs because I love the feedback from those of you. And even in sort of like y'all didn't watch like Aquaman 2 or What If, you don't need to be watching all the stuff. I can't watch everything. It doesn't stop you guys from jumping in and checking out the stream or checking out the podcast. I got an amazing message last week after we finished with Garrett. And he says, because we didn't just talk about What If season two. Like, I don't know if I'd be capable of just talking about What If season two. We talked a lot about filmmaking and storytelling as well. And JC said, hey, man, caught some of the show tonight. Really enjoyed some things you guys were talking about, especially when Garrett was talking about struggles to be the man, not a man, right? Like the idea that this is a horse race, that being a filmmaker or a writer or being a success in your field it's not just you. You don't have to be the man. And exploring different avenues to tell your stories, it all pretty much struck a chord with me, factoring some of the projects I have percolating in early 2024. So thank you, JC. Yes, I think that was a very vulnerable conversation. I think it was awesome. Y'all learned a little bit about some of the dips I had last year during the strike. That was pretty hard. But that is what this is about. Geekscape isn't just about talking pop culture. We want to talk. We want to make sure that you know that you are also a part of this fabric of storytelling. I think pop culture, these stories just give us context for our lives, right? Like you ever read a sci-fi story or watch like Star Trek or something and you're like, whoa, that resonates with me, even though it's absolute fiction. Y'all know that. Y'all get that. And Geekscape is just a place where we can share some of those things and say, hey, knock, knock, knock. I'm talking to your ears right now. If you're maybe at work or something, or maybe you're on a run or something, and you're listening to Geekscape as a podcast. Tap, tap, tap. I'm tapping on the microphone. I'm tapping on the camera. That is why I do Geekscape, to connect with you. I want y'all to connect with each other. Maybe it's on our Facebook or on our socials or whatever. Maybe it's in person at like Comic-Con or something. And I also want you to connect with creators. I want creators to tell their stories so that y'all feel like maybe you're on the right track in your journey through the geek sphere. This is not just let's talk about Wolverine. Okay. Like I cannot do that. And that becomes very lonesome, and it's not a race to be a know-it-all. I'm not the know-it-all. So JC, thank you for that message last week. It made me happy. It made Garrett happy that he resonated with you. Speaking of projects in 2024, I raced from a meeting with Film San Antonio, and they were so nice. They gave me a lot of gifts. I'm just going to show them to you right now. I'm from Austin, of course. You all know that if you listen to Geekscape. And Film San Antonio found me somehow. And they're like, hey, we heard you wanted to make a movie in Austin because it ended up on a screenwriting award list or something. And I got some awards for a script I wrote to be based in Austin. And they were like, what's up with that movie you wanted to do in Austin? Could you make it in San Antonio? So I'm just real quickly, I'm going to tell you how they bribed me. Okay, they got me a hat. This is Film San Antonio. That hat's awesome. All right. That's cool. They told me all about their incentives. They can give you a lot if you film in San Antonio. They are not sponsoring this program. I just thought that Kim and Stacy were incredibly nice. They got me a Visit San Antonio glass. It's an hour and a half from my parents' house. You don't have to ask me twice. I love San Antonio. They got me, holy crap, they know I'm a nerd. Look at this. They got me what looks like a dice bag with dice. So they know that I'm going to use that in D&D or something. And some sunglasses. Sunglasses when I'm walking around San Antonio, I got to look cool. They got me a fan. I think that's a fan. I'm not going to open it on the air. It's either a fan or a small umbrella. A pen, a bunch of stuff. But Film San Antonio, I will tell you this, Film San Antonio. I don't know how y'all found me. You found me because you were like, oh, this guy's a media and a filmmaker. We should meet with him when we're in town. And Film San Antonio, I'm glad you did, because I immediately went to that old script that I have not opened in 5 years. And I said, could this work in San Antonio? And then I sent it to an actor. I was like, hey, read the script. Tell me if it resonates with you. And maybe I rewrite it a little bit and update it and change it to San Antonio. Your move, Austin, Texas. Your move. But like I said, like JC, you wrote me, and of course we're going to talk to Mickey about his journey in storytelling. We are not in this alone. Like, we're in this together, and I enjoy this so much. Again, it's hard for me to consume some of this stuff. I saw the holdovers from the time you heard me last. I watched the holdovers. I thought it was amazing, and it's humbling. And I always like Alexander Payne's movies, but this script, it's fantastic, and it immediately made me go, that script I turned in last week, it's not good enough. Too late now. Too late now. Sometimes you just gotta move forward. No, all the time. You know what? Correct that. All the time, you just gotta move forward. So let's move forward with Geekscape. You know how we do it here. I'm gonna throw a little theme song on you. Hang tight. We'll be right back with potentially Oscar nominated. We're gonna cross our fingers. We're gonna go and watch this short. We're all gonna put the good vibes out in the ether. We're rooting for them. And we're going to come back with shortlisted for the Oscar, Mickey Rapkin. All right, Geekscapists, we are live, and Mickey's in the wings, and he asked me for the show. He's like, should I wear my glasses? Not wear my glasses. There's a bit of a glare on his computer. You can kind of see it when you wear the glasses. I'm going to wear my glasses to make Mickey feel better. These are the Film San Antonio glasses that I just got. Just kidding. If you'd like to sponsor this space on Geekscape, feel free. Email me, jonathan@geekscape.net. All right, let's bring Mickey in here, and let's talk to him about all things potentially Oscar nominee. All right, Mickey, I feel like I just saw you like last night. We were there at the Museum of Tolerance and we were screening your wonderful film, man.
Thank you for being there and thanks for having me on the show.
Dude, Mickey, a little over a year ago, December 2022, we were shooting this short. You were directing it. You were writing it, and I was in charge of just doing a behind the scenes, interviewing you, cutting the thing together. That's up on the Reboot Studios YouTube. Did you think that we'd be talking in January, a little over a year later, about you being shortlisted for an Academy Award?
No, I did. I absolutely did not. I was just hoping to get through our shoot without anybody getting COVID. about awards.
But what I love about it, and what excited me about the short, was the cast, because Mickey. Don't be offended, but I was like, Mickey Rapkin. I had to like Google. I was like, oh my god, he wrote the book that Pitch Perfect's based on. Oh my god, he was like an editor in chief for like a major publication. Cool, he's written some cool books. Has he directed before? So I showed up and I was like, okay, let's watch this. So, you know, I had to watch a little bit of it to start getting the vibe for the behind the scenes footage and to interview you. I had to do some research. I thought you were awesome.
And
what I heard coming from the monitors of like the dialogue and stuff, I did not read the script. I didn't see the full thing until the short was finished.
Glad you did your homework.
I was like, this dude is the only person I'd met prior was Seth Meyers. Met him years ago.
Josh Myers.
Sorry.
He and his brother look very much alike. They have similar mannerisms, but
one of them played a fawn in. Wasn't even one of those like parodies of a fantasy movie. He played like a fawn or something, like a Narnia fantasy.
I don't know, but I
parody will take thing.
Your word.
But it was good. To, you know, I'm sitting here going, "Oh my god, you've got some heavy hitters as part of this short film."
No, we
like,
got
immediately. That's the first thing I noticed. Was like, "Oh my god, recognizable cast is in the short film."
No, we got so lucky with this cast. Unbelievable. I mean, it's the first. Member to join the cast was Jason Butler Harner from Ozark, played Agent Petty in the first two seasons. I had an in with him because he happens to be my husband. So he had to do it. I highly recommend marrying your favorite actor and as a very long con to eventually put them in something. And then we sent it to Ari Grainer, who is, you know, so great on I'm Dying Up Here and Mrs. America. She happens to be a friend. And she said she would do it. I couldn't believe it. You know, she read it and said, I think this is funny and this is a story worth telling. Yes, I'll do it. And then we sent it to Chris Perfetti from Abbott Elementary and he was busy. You know, these people are busy. He was shooting Abbott and they were in the midst of Emmy campaigns and all these things and photo shoots. And he took the time to do it. It was an embarrassment of riches. You know, I was just so lucky. Kate Burton nominated for a Tony for Hedda Gabler. She came to play with us. Josh Myers. And then Mary Beth Barone, this young comedian who was.
She's hilarious.
She's so funny. I'd seen her, a casting director. You know, I knew everybody else in the cast more or less and somehow. But that last part, casting this young influencer, I don't know a lot of young people. Anyway, so a casting director friend sent me Mary Beth Barone clips. She was on, she'd been on Jimmy Fallon doing stand up and she was just so funny and so alive. And she read the script. She said she would do it. I was just so lucky.
Well, first off, congratulations because y'all, cutting the behind the scenes together, I watched the short. And I immediately texted Noam and I said, dude, this short is awesome. And this is, when was I working on that? Over the summer, maybe?
Yeah.
I was like, dude, this is awesome. This short is really good. And he's like, yeah, no, it's good. And I'm like, no. Noam, this short is very, very good. The writing. Let's just talk about the writing.
We should tell people
what it's about. This is the Anne Frank gift shop, folks. And it's shortlisted for the short form live action Oscar.
It's called the Anne Frank Gift Shop, and it's a dark comedy that imagines this meeting between the Anne Frank house and this New York design firm they've hired to help them renovate the gift shop to appeal to young people. It's a very dark comedy, as it says on the poster, but it grew out of a really disturbing academic study from 2020 that showed a shocking lack of knowledge among young people in the United States. And their knowledge of the Holocaust. you know, the 2/3 of young Americans couldn't tell you how many Jews were killed in the Holocaust. 11% of respondents believed Jews caused the Holocaust. It was frightening. You know, it made international news, and I was trying to think of I wanted to make a short film. What would it be about? I wanted it to, important is the wrong word, but I wanted it to say something. And I hit upon this idea of the Anne Frank gift shop. Yes, so that's what it's about.
Didn't Justin Bieber go to the Anne Frank house and come out and say something like, if Anne Frank were alive today, she'd be a Belieber or something? That's just a little cringy.
That's exactly what,
like,
he said. Yes.
What the, it just, exactly, there's just a collective, what the F, dude? What are you talking about? But it shows this dissonance, right? I'm generational gaps.
Listen, no knock on Bieber.
No,
I love the music. It's young people. Like we say in the short, young people have access to tragedy in their pocket. You know, 24 hours a day, they can see the worst thing you could ever imagine. And in many ways, they're now desensitized to the horrors of the Holocaust and the horrors of many other things. Just because this is not a thing I'm inventing. This is, scientists have studied this. They call it empathy fatigue. And they just, young people have a hard time processing horror because they really have so much access to it. Anyway, so it becomes a challenge. There's no knock against young people. It becomes a challenge to reach them. So this short uses dark comedy to disarm these young people, you know? And then once they're laughing, you are able to sneak in this message, the message of the film, which is, we need to keep telling the story again and again and again, or it will happen again.
And Mickey, did you think that, and sadly, October 7th, and we can talk as much or as little about October 7th as you want, because it is a hot effing topic, and we all have friends on both sides of this thing, and there are good and bad actors on both sides of this thing, and it is multifaceted. This is not a binary issue, but could you imagine horrifically that, like, your short would have that level of resonance?
No, it's crazy. I mean, we shot this thing long before that, the events of October 7th. And, you know, it's funny, I've been doing these interviews and people have said, like, you know, wow, isn't it amazing your film is so timely?
No, and it's not amazing. It's horrifying. No,
it's horrifying. Like, it's awful.
But it also goes to the point of the short that, like,
what I say is the film is arriving at a time where the world is reminded of the stakes. And listen, I grieve. This is not really the forum where I want to get into this, but, like,
yes,
I grieve.
We can talk about Superman or something.
I grieve for innocent lives.
Yes.
I'm horrified by what I'm seeing. I feel like saying we pray for peace is, like, kind of an embarrassing thing to say, but, like, I'm telling you, I pray for peace.
Yeah. The simplifications that we see coming out of something like this may be part of the desensitization that we talk about, the empathy fatigue, in that some of these horrors are so insane and unimaginable that you have to simplify them into just little sayings or something that goes on, like, almost like on a poster board at a rally or a bumper sticker, because it's almost impossible to comprehend. And when we made our documentary Dock of the Dead for Epics years ago about zombies, the thing that I really loved and wanted to research, and some of it's in the movie, some of it's not, because it's 2 hours. There's only so much you can fit in a film. For me, something that Simon Pegg said was that the zombie was a metaphor for death. And that led me down down this path of, like, oh my God, we are a traumatized society. We love The Walking Dead because we have seen everything from 9/11 to Katrina to multiple tsunamis or war on terror. You know, our own politicians were telling us there's a war on terror. This broad generality. Who knows where it's coming from? And we couldn't actually collectively think about it in any way that we could comprehend. So something, and I talked about it a little bit in the intro, Geekscape is the whole thing about why we love pop culture and metaphor. I think the zombie for us was, we were into the zombie because we were going through a collective trauma, mm-hmm. and we were trying to wrap our heads around a survival instinct that was being forced upon us by the imagery you see, the trauma in your pocket, where you're seeing 9/11, you're Katrina, you're seeing the war on terror, you're seeing these things happen globally and immediately. Into it's going right into your eyeballs through your phone or through your TV, and you have to almost tap out and say, I'm gonna watch The Walking Dead and think about what I would do if everybody was a zombie, and maybe I'll go to Costco, or maybe I'd hide in the walls of my home, or maybe I would become a cannibal, or I don't know what I would do. And I think that sadly this is something that we face, and maybe our brains aren't evolving at the pace that our high speed Ethernet is throwing this stuff at us. But the solution is collective, I believe. And it's empathetic, I believe. And again, it's a little bit of what I said at the beginning is like Geekscape is like, I do this show not to tell you guys that I know everything about Spider-Man. You know, I do know a lot of useless stuff about pop culture, but and I don't do this show to show you guys that my opinion on the latest MCU release is the best or most informative. I do this because I think it's important for you to listen and know that you're not alone in this, and to meet people like Mickey who are sympathetic and think about these things and also want to open roads of accessibility through his talents, which are humor, writing, being able to see something and add some level of poignancy through his perspective. Where did that begin for you, Mickey? Where did you start writing?
Where did I start, like creative writing?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always been a writer. Kid, I've always been, I don't know. I started writing in high school in the school paper. I mean, no one wants to care. Who cares about that?
No, but it was journalism. Why was it journalism, and why wasn't it creative writing? Does that make sense? That's what I'm getting to, because the Anne Frank gift shop is creative writing. These are fictional characters in a fun kind of. Why journalism?
I guess because it was a job. Like, you can't apply to be a creative writer.
You get rejected a lot.
I mean, yeah, there's not a lot of jobs for that. So I was a journalist, you know, I still am a journalist. I worked, at two magazines in New York for a long time. It was a career, you know,
Did that in college as well. Like the college paper, you were that person who's like, oh, I'm putting up the stories in the college paper. And
yeah, I was wrote for the college paper. And
where was that?
I went to Cornell. Wrote for the
Nothing to do in Cornell. That's the Ivy that everybody's like, there's nothing. No, you wanted to go to Penn and Columbia. I went to Penn and Columbia, and you're in a city with people.
No,
Cornell,
we made fun of the Cornell kids.
You wanted
trees.
Cow tip is what you did. You wanted to go knock cows over in the middle of the night.
I wanted, trees and a quad and that sort of classic college experience, which I had. I wrote for the school paper there, and I mean, the truth is, we're really like getting into this. It kind of all comes back to a cappella music.
that's the most Ivy answer
because
ever.
Because I would say my formative college experience, I guess if I had two of them, would be the school paper and singing in an a cappella group. So, which I mean, going back to your point of nothing to do in Ithaca, New York. That may or may not be true, but one of the things that people do is go to a cappella concerts. And
I thought Penn had like 19 of them. I was like,
Penn has a lot. Cornell has a ton. but it was incredibly fun. You know, I was in this group and we sold out this, you know, 2000 person concert hall on campus, and people would stop us in the campus store. Like, I don't want to say we were like campus celebrities, but people knew people turned up for our shows. Like, it was really, we really fun. We recorded albums. I think, we took road trips together. It was that thing.
You were a campus celebrity. I think the Mask and Wig kids at Penn were the campus celebrities, I believe. Remember Mask and Wig?
Of course. I know Mask and Wig.
Yeah. Those guys were, everybody was like, oh my God, that guy's in Mask and Wig. Mask and Wig. I remember one of the Mask and Wig kids was directing a production of Best Little Whorehouse, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Yep.
And they lost a member. And somebody came up to me and was like, Jonathan, you're funny. We want you in the cast. I didn't audition. If I had auditioned and had, I can't sing. I like hid in the back and mouth things in the back.
That's hilarious.
The speaking stuff, fine. That was funny. But the singing stuff, I remember I tried singing once at a rehearsal and this girl walked up to me and she goes, why don't you pick a key and stick to it? Or something like that. I don't know how to sing. I just mouthed everything in the background.
They needed a handsome, warm body. There you were.
But that was handsome then, yeah.
A million years later, when I was working at GQ, a book agent called and he said, I really like your writing in the magazine. You should write a book. Have you ever thought about writing a book? And I said, no. But the only thing I want to write a book about is college a cappella groups. And he was not impressed. He thought it was a horrible idea and said to come up with something else. So I put some other ideas together. And to his credit, he said, if this is really the thing you want to write about, let's try it. So I pitched a nonfiction book about a cappella groups where I would follow three a cappella groups on the road for a school year and write about their adventures because I knew the world was funny. I knew all these random celebrities had sang in these a cappella groups when they were in college and that there were, 1,200 groups across the United States. And, there would, anyway, I knew that it would be funny. So I kept my day job and I would travel on the weekends following these three groups. It was like an insane schedule. I feel like I did it at the last moment where I was like young enough to do it, like physically young enough to, leave on a Thursday night, fly somewhere or drive somewhere to meet these kids.
Yeah. This wasn't Fast Times at Ridgemont High, right? Like Fast Time at Ridgemont High, he passed as a high school student.
No, right? I was definitely not passing as a college student, but I didn't look like a narc,
you were cool.
I could hang out. But I was there. And it was amazing. I went on spring break with them and I was in the recording studio with them. And one of the groups that I followed was an all-female group from Oregon who had gotten to the finals of this competition. Everyone thought they were going to win. They didn't win. They went back to school kind of bummed out. Everybody graduated except these two girls. And they were like, we're going to restock this group and we're going to come back and win because no female groups had won before. So the book came out. I was still writing the book and I get this phone call. When my agent forwards me an email, he's like, do you want to have lunch with Elizabeth Banks? She's like heard about the book proposal and thinks it would make a good movie. And I was like, hell yeah, I want to have lunch with Elizabeth Banks. And I had lunch with her. She's like, I love this idea. She went to Penn. She knew a cappella groups. She was already interested in that world. She was just looking for source material so somebody could go write this thing. And she's like, laid it out exactly what she's like, it's going to be Bring It On for a cappella groups. I was like, great, let's do it. I was like, we hug goodbye. I'm like, I'm never going to see this woman again in my life. Like I worked at GQ. People's things got optioned all the time. Nothing ever happened with it. I was like, I have a story now where I had lunch with Elizabeth Banks. Anyway, when the book came out, she took it to Universal. She and her husband, Max Handelman, they took it to Universal. They got Kay Cannon, who was writing on 30 Rock at the time, to write the script. Kay is a genius. I hung out with her. She pitched the opening scene, the vomit, the whole... I mean, it was like a dream. Like, everything these people said came true. It was shocking. But I never would have dared to think about writing something like that on my own. I was just like a kid from Long Island who was like happy to have a job, like, and a 401k and have someone else pay my cell phone bill. I was like not betting on myself. which is, I'm not judging myself by any means. I'm just explaining the story of like how this came to be. And I went to the set of Pitch Perfect. You know, they when a miracle like this happens, they fly you in, and there's that chair, you know, with the name of the movie on it. And this transportation guy, this van picks me up at the hotel, and they shot in Louisiana, and he was like a grizzled guy, you know. He was probably 50, but he looked 80. Like his skin was like the complete leather.
He's half alligator.
Giving the full alligator. And he was like, hey, like, what brings you to set? You know, I'm like, oh, I wrote the book that they, you know, inspired the movie. And he was like, man, that's amazing. We're all pulling for this movie. We love these kids. And I was like, if this guy is pulling for this a cappella comedy that's like, in theory, for teenage girls, I was like, this movie is going to be something. And I went back to my office at GQ and I wrote a script. I was like, if this ever happens again, maybe I can write the script. And I wrote a romantic comedy, kind of loosely inspired on my life. And I sent it to a friend who was a manager, Chris Huvane, who I used to work with at GQ, who sadly is not with us anymore, but was a huge hero and champion of mine and a great friend. And he shared it with the people at Management 360 where he worked, and I signed with them. And what can I say about it? It was a journey for me to quit my full-time job and like dare to do this thing.
And Mickey, if that film happened or not, did you ever, as Pitch Perfect then picked up subsequent sequels, did you get any writing on any of the sequels?
No, I didn't. I was a consultant. I didn't write on any of the movies.
Sure.
No, consultant.
Because when I'm sitting there watching you direct, and I know you were nervous. You told me, or at least you were nervous, but I thought you were great. Hearing the words, I honestly thought, Mickey, I was like, did I miss parts of my research? Because this guy is writing like a fantastic seasoned TV writer. Because there wasn't a lot of improv, I know, in the film. There was some stuff improv. Obviously, if you have Josh Myers on set, there's going to be some improv. Yeah. If you have people from Abbott Elementary, there's going to be some improv. But it just, the script just felt like it was following the rule of setup and payoff that you get from a seasoned TV script on a comedy, on a network comedy. And I was like, this is, I have something here. And then when I watched the completed short, I said, no, they have something here.
No, I appreciate you saying it. I mean, I'd sold over the, like, I continue to be a journalist and, but over the years also sold a handful of pilots that never got made and a couple of feature film scripts that were mostly comedies. This business, it's impossible. This business,
it's impossible.
It is impossible.
I get and I'm telling you, sunglasses. They send me sunglasses, and I'm like, oh, thank God, it's worth something.
I'm saying that as someone who already had a miracle happen in their life. Okay, like you don't get someone like Elizabeth Banks and Max Handelman coming into your life, plucking you out of a cubicle, taking this thing, this book, and turning it into not just one movie, but three movies and a TV show. And not only did that happen, people love it around the world. And these producers kept me in the conversation and made me feel like I was a part of the family. So I've already had a miracle happen, like a true miracle. And I'm still telling you, this business is impossible. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. Right before the pandemic and then into the pandemic, I was working on a TV show with that I was writing. The producers were heroes of mine. It was based on a novel from a writer I love. And we got so close to making it. We sold it to Apple. They were making offers to actresses, like dream actresses. I had a Zoom with one. I was like, oh my God, we're going to make this show. I can't believe we're going to make this show. And then it fell apart. And it was, I mean, I went into a deep depression. Okay. I felt so close to this thing that I'd wanted so badly. And it was heartbreaking. It was devastating. I got a therapist. I mean, I was just so defeated. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's what ultimately led to this short, because I needed to take some power back. I was, mm-hmm. you know, you come to, you come to this town and you think the phone's going to ring one day and someone's going to say, "Welcome to Hollywood. We're so happy to have you here." You know, like, go make the thing you want to make. Like, those phone calls just don't happen. You know, it doesn't work like that.
And I drove Peter Bogdanovich around for weeks, and he talked to me twice. And I think I've told the story of what he actually said when he talked to me. And I'll repeat it one day on the podcast Geekscape. Please subscribe.
That's so funny.
It made my fucking head spin. I was like, of all the things, I thought this guy was like going to be like, fall in love with me, right?
Right.
And you spend days with this guy, weeks with this guy, and you're like, oh, he can make a phone call and change my life. And you think maybe that's the way, right?
And it just doesn't. When
he finally opens his mouth, I'm like, what the fuck did you just say? I'm sorry, but like, to this day, I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, it doesn't happen. If you're sitting around waiting for that phone call that's going to change your life, it's not what's going to happen. So
directing was you giving yourself agency. Yes,
I was like, I can't sit around anymore and wait for these gatekeepers to say yes and say, it's your time. And Reboot Studios was launching. They were looking for ideas that they wanted to tell Jewish stories, but in new and challenging ways. And I pitched them. They were giving out small grants, small investments, and I pitched them the Anne Frank gift shop. And they said yes. So I got a small grant from them. I wrote the script. I researched it. I was happy with the results. I felt like I had something, and I started to just put the pieces together. You know, I keep saying in these Q&As, like, making a short film, making any film, is like a game of chicken. You know, you just keep saying out loud, oh yeah, we're shooting at the end of December. And you don't have the money, and you don't have the cast, and you don't have the location. But you're like, we're shooting at the end of December. So I reached out to a DP. She was a friend of a friend. Her name's Chloe Weaver. She was a DP on Hacks and Chef's Table and The Bear. She's amazing. And
she's amazing.
I sent her the script. She said, I think this is really funny. We had a coffee. I had a lookbook, you know, of like what I hoped it would look and feel like. We had a coffee together. She's like, I'll totally do this. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. So then I had Jason in the cast. I had Ari. I went to Chris. I was like, hey, I've got this DP from Chef's Table. Ari and Jason are people you know and love and respect. They're going to do it. Anyway, just start putting the pieces together. Then I go back to Reboot. I was like, okay, now I have this cast.
We're cooking with fire. Yeah.
Yeah. I got this cast and I have this DP. And it was almost like, I dare you to say no. Like, you said you wanted to make these Jewish, interesting Jewish projects. I need some more money. They said,
let's go, Kat Nelson. Did you know David Kat Nelson?
I knew
before
him.
Or know him
just,
drumming?
I knew him just, I know my method, this process. Noam runs Reboot Studios. I met him when I applied with this project.
You guys have heard of him on Geekscape, one of my closest friends.
David Kat Nelson, who is the CEO of, I think the CEO of Reboot, the founder, I can't remember.
I don't know. He's hilarious. I love
David. I met him only in passing. Anyway, they said, okay, we'll give you a little bit more of the money. Then I was like, okay, if I have to pay for the rest of it myself, I will. It'll be painful, but if I have to put the rest of it on a credit card, I will, because we'd found a location which came through a connection. It was much less expensive, like 10% of what the other locations cost.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, we have a date. It's this one weekend in December. I know the cast can all do it that weekend. If I blink, this project will fall apart.
Yes.
So if I have to pay for the rest of it myself, I will. Luckily, I didn't have to pay for the rest of it. A friend introduced me to this producer in New York, Jane Oster-Sinisi. She's the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors. She's produced a bunch of films. And I sent her the script. I sent her the lookbook. I was like, I'm looking for financing. You know, can you help? And I was nervous. Like, she's the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors. I'm sending her this script, the Anne Frank gift shop, that has like a joke. It has a joke about like an escape room. Like, the jokes are hard.
Put an escape room in it.
If you haven't figured out at this point, the movie is a hard comedy. Like, it's comedy first. Yeah. Anyway, she wrote me back and she was like, I think this is funny and I think this has to be made and told. So she put up a third of the money. So we were a third, a third, a third. And I later got a completion grant when the movie was done from the Jewish Film Institute. So
it just kept the lesson, like you're laying the track as the train is coming, right. But you have to leave the track because exactly the train is coming.
Like yes. The lesson of this thing is like, people are always like, oh, you have to bet on yourself. And I'm like,
what does that even mean?
Okay, sure. But like, it's expensive to bet on yourself and not everybody can do it. And I was lucky enough to be in a place where I had connections to actors. Listen, actors aren't showing up to do a favor. Like, I mean, it was a favor, but they wouldn't have done it if it was bad. Like,
right. And Mickey, nobody wants to at be that point, that is how you are betting on yourself. Does that make sense? Like, everyone has their talents they can bring. Sometimes, like, it's like you look at the Avengers, Thor's a god, Captain America's a super soldier with the serum. What's Tony's power? I mean, he's brilliant, but Tony's rich. And exactly. Sometimes what people can bring is the money. You brought the talent, Mickey, and it doesn't happen without the talent. It doesn't happen without your writing. And then you had to step up, and this took bravery because you knew it was on the line. You knew that everybody was looking at you, and you hadn't directed.
Right.
And that was you betting on yourself. So I don't want to hear none of this. You had to start a Kickstarter or you had to pull it into your savings to make this, because you had to step up and be courageous and do something that you hadn't done before. You'd seen it done before, but you hadn't been the person in the shoes and the person that everyone's head swivels to when there's a decision to be made. Everybody's head swivels to you. You did bet on yourself.
And I'm super proud of it. But I don't want anyone to think that it was that I was cavalier about it or that it was easy.
You weren't.
Like, I remember, it was two shoot days. And we were on set. I made a lot of cuts in the editing room, okay?
Sure.
And a lot of the cuts in the editing room were from the first day of shooting because there was all the setup to the meeting that I realized was not necessary. And anytime it started to feel like an educational film, I was like, ugh, cut that, cut that, cut that. But I remember on the first day, we're on the set, and a guy on the crew said to me, so is the Anne Frank House paying for this? And I was devastated. I was like, oh my God, I'm making this, in my mind, I'm like, we're making this dark comedy, and this kid thinks like we're making like a PSA. And I was like, oh my God, this was a disaster. Like, nobody was laughing. Okay. Listen.
Based on the script being a bit info dumpy on.
It was info dumpy in the first half. Yeah. But also, sure. Like, comedy, a lot of it comes together in the editing room, you know, yes. Like the reaction shots, all this. So like Julia Louis, listen, I can't believe I'm going to tell a Julia Louis-Dreyfus thing in this. I in no way am in the same universe as Julia Louis-Dreyfus, but I'm just going to say she gave this interview once about Veep and people are like, oh, it must be so funny on set. Everyone's always laughing. And she was like, it's not funny. Like, it's work and painstaking. You're getting the rhythm, you're getting everything in there, like, but it's not a slapsticky thing. Anyway, so on set there was not a lot of laughter. Also, it's a lot of people staring at their phones. Like, the scene is going and, you know, I'm looking at the monitor, the whole thing, and you look over and like people are just bored and on their phones. And it was really like, there were moments that I saw on the screen were so funny to me, you know, where I'm laughing out loud. And then there's emotional moments in the movie too, where I came in to the room and I was crying. You know, I said to the actors, like, I want to do it one more time. We're looking for this and this, but I was crying. I was so moved, but the magic really comes together in the editing room.
But that barometer that you had on set, knowing what you had to collect as you go out, you know, I always think about a fisherman going out and he's like, I don't actually necessarily know what fish I'm going to get, but I know I'm going to catch a bunch of stuff, and when, and I'll dice it up when I get home and see what I'm serving, and yeah. see what we're really making, right? See what's biting. We got to see what's biting. We got to see what's out there. We got to adjust. And Mickey, you're betting on yourself every time that you fall back on your barometer and ask people to do it again. Every time you ask them to trust you to do it again, that you don't have what you think you need, that is betting on yourself. So I've pounded that home. This screening last night, you followed one of the most beautiful, powerful, yet somber films I've ever seen. This is another short listed film by Rita Basulto, Humo. And Humo is smoke in Spanish, H-U-M-O. And oh my God. Like,
it was, it's a beautiful stop motion
animation short. She worked on Pinocchio for Benicio del Toro, guys. She's from Guadalajara, and
yeah, she's no joke. She's like won the Mexican Oscar. She's no joke. This movie, it's a sort of gut wrenching stop motion animation film told from the eyes of this young boy, like an 8-year-old boy, seeing who's in a concentration camp and is seeing this train going towards the smokehouse. And it's I'm so glad you were there to see it on a big screen. You know, I did a couple of events, a couple of joint screenings with Rita. You know, when the short list is announced, you just have a couple of weeks to try to throw together some screenings and events to try to get voters there and try to get the word out. And I was scrolling through the list of the animated films, and I was like, oh my God, if we could do a screening together, like thematically, this would be amazing. You know, both of our films look at the Holocaust in surprising ways. But I had originally seen Humo on my phone, and it was moving, but to see it on the big screen and the level of detail in the stop motion animation, the movie is absolutely stunning.
The eyes of these characters, Geekscape, is what I told Heidi as I was driving home. Heidi called and said, how was the screening? And I said, everybody loved Anne Frank Gift Shop. And you had a tough gig because you're following up a very emotionally powerful, there's no levity in Humo. There's innocence, but there's no levity. It is a sad, dour movie. And the second it opens up and you see this little boy's eyes, and he said, we're going on, you know, and he compares the train that took him to the concentration camp. He said, this is a train, but not like the train that took us to the beach. And you're like, I'm out. I mean, I honestly was like, I don't think I can make it through the 9 minutes of this.
Yeah.
And I said, sweetie, just, you got to see the models that they made, these paper mache and rosin, like models that they made for this, these miniatures, the eyes. I told her in Spanish, I was like, the little characters' butts are haunting me. Like all of them, the way they moved, everything is haunting about this. And then here comes Mickey Rourke with his comedy.
But when the boy starts crying, the way she did the tears welling up in the eyes for the mom and the boy, it's remarkable. But I actually was thrilled to screen right after that. Obviously, we're a comedy.
If you screen before that, you're dead. You're not dead, but you know what I mean? Like that was the right order.
What I like about it is her film makes you see the Holocaust with fresh eyes. It's, first of all, it's in Spanish, which you're not used to a Holocaust story in Spanish. So you're already sort of brain is reorienting. And then you're watching it through the eyes of this child, and it's so gut-wrenching. So it's like that film sets up the stakes of the story. And then you cut to my film, this comedy, and it's so fresh for you, the Holocaust, that you're immersed in this room and in this conversation, and you're kind of like emotionally and intellectually engaged with the arguments that they're having in the Anne Frank gift shop.
And Mickey, you kept us from I was so depressed after that. I was so moved and so like, I don't know if I can take more of a beating. And there you are to like give us a nice warm, like, yeah. Hey, I'm going to have, you know, your movie is poignant. I've described it as, it's got some profound stuff in it. It shares the crucial message, Geekscape, is that we have to keep telling the stories of the horrors that exist in this world, or risk repeating them as we've seen them repeated very, you know, recently, and we need to continue to educate each other and keep talking about these things. And Mickey did it in a comedic way, which I think is so hard, and just shows how much skill you've got with words and with perspective and with the actors. And somebody on Facebook just said, he was lovely on set. I cannot wait to see it in Geekscapist. That is where I come in and say that you can actually see it. If you're watching this live on GQ.com until January 16th. So if you're listening to this on the podcast, yeah, I hope you're listening to it within the first week, because you're going to want to see it. This is why you should subscribe to Geekscape, so you can listen to this as soon as it comes out, and you're not going to miss it on GQ.com, because you only got till the 16th. And now, and Heidi just called from the other room and said, that was my comment. So thank you, Heidi, for watching your husband's podcast. We also have Jim Paganelli in New York saying, hey, I'm loving this discussion. I hereby petition you to rename the show Deepscape. We've got Mickey. I'm so happy you had such a positive, wonderful Teamster experience. Yes, Jim works. Jim works in the office and works with a lot of. He works in the line production over there on big shows too. I think I don't want to blow your stuff up, Jim, but I think you're working on Fallout, the new Fallout based on the video game that all the Geekscapers know about. I work in film TV production, and moments like that guy had with you are wonderful, and a reason I work in the industry. He's talking about the individual who asked if the Anne Frank gift shop paid for this.
Yeah.
But he, in a way, was also being educated in a way. So it's a beautiful experience. Yeah. And Heidi jumps in to say, oh, hi, this is Heidi. Heidi, I love you. Thank you for everything. And you know, speaking of significant others, it was amazing seeing Jason again yesterday. Yeah. He's a sweetheart. And I heard him speak some really incredible Spanish with Rita talking about her film.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love it. And he actually said, Mickey's Spanish is even better. So all Spanish Geekscape coming up soon. We're going to do it. Finally, I want to talk about who you had hosting last night. And
yeah.
I have not had Selma Blair on the show, but I've had Doug Jones and Ron Perlman from the Hellboy franchise. Mm. They've done panels with me, and Doug Jones is a longtime friend of the show. And they were in Hellboy with her, but I haven't had Selma Blair on the show, but you had her as a host of last night's event. How'd that go down?
It was a dream come true. This is not ruining the movie in any way to say this. No. There is a joke in the movie. Selma Blair is mentioned in the movie. You know, she recorded the audiobook for the Diary of a Young Girl, which we call, you know, the Diary of Anne Frank. It's called the Diary of a Young Girl. And Selma Blair, she was nominated for a Grammy for recording this book. So there's a joke in the movie. You know, there's this influencer, and she quotes the book, and you know, this guy from the museum says, like, I'm surprised you read the book. She's like, of course I read the book. I did the audiobook. Selma Blair is the narrator. And it was amazing to have Selma Blair there. Just, I love her from a million things. And that we sent her the movie. We were looking for a host for this screening. We sent her the movie. She watched it over the weekend. It came together very last minute. And she thought it was hilarious. She loved that she was in it. And she came out, like, she showed up last night in such a beautiful way. She introduced the two films. She stood up during the Q&A to talk about her experience, you know, of being a Jewish child and being, you know, obsessed with the Holocaust. I mean, she was so funny and so generous. I always hoped she would come to an event, you know, like once the movie like was cut together and it was funny and that Selma Blair bit, and then there's a callback later to her. I always hoped and dreamed that I would be able to show it to her. She would come to something. So I couldn't believe it. Like, it was all night. I was thinking about it.
And she choked up, I think, when she was talking that bit during the Q&A. Like, I'm watching her, and she was two rows in front of me, and I'm like, oh, she caught her. I think she caught herself because she was choked up. Her feelings about the film and how profound it is, I think, were sincere.
Yeah, it was. She was so lovely.
So you're on cloud nine.
I truly could not believe it.
Mickey, have you daydreamed about what you would wear or what the night would be if you, I mean, have you allowed yourself to even think that you guys are shortlisted to what, 15 films and it's going to get.
Yeah. So it's the 187 film short, 187 live action short films qualified for the Oscar. Of that 187, it was narrowed and voted down to 15. So now of these 15, five will get nominated on January 23rd. We'll find out live on TV along with everybody else.
Geekscapists, if you guys are in the voting committee, if anybody watching this, hearing this,
please watch the film.
Watch the film and then vote on it. But like, have you allowed yourself to go beyond this short list and think about?
I would be lying if I said I wasn't thinking about it 24 hours a day.
Because no one went and bought a suit.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't.
No, I'm kidding. I hope not. I'm kidding. No, you better not be jinxing your boys over here. But I'm very proud of him and Greg Sikowski.
No, of course.
We started a company this summer together, and I'm the one that didn't get, you know, I was the one not. Greg, Noam, and I started a company this summer in the past year, and now I am in business with two potential Oscar nominees.
It would be. I can't even say it would be a dream come true because I never. In a billion years, imagine that. But
you didn't
it would
think
be,
Elizabeth Banks was going to call you back.
It's true. I never thought I'd hear from Elizabeth Banks again. And
y'all did a Q&A.
Thank God I was wrong.
Recently as well.
Yes,
yeah.
She hosted a Q&A in December for us at a screening we did at the Holocaust Museum, LA. No, she's an incredible producer, actress, friend.
Quaker, Penn Quaker.
And Penn alum. She but anyway, we listen, it would be a miracle. It would be incredible to be there. I'm not thinking about like the parties and this. Like I wanna go to the Oscar luncheon that they have where I just wanna meet everybody. Not like celebrity, I wanna meet that celebrity. Like that's not it. I wanna meet these filmmakers. Like when you have these short films and you're lucky enough to play some festivals, you meet filmmakers and
it's awesome.
It's incredible. Like I went to SCAD, the film festival in Savannah. Anne Frank Gift Shop played there and there was like a filmmaker lounge that night and I met Cord Jefferson who made this incredible, wrote and directed this incredible film, American Fiction, which is so funny. And I was like so nervous. He'd written on all these fancy TV shows and won an Emmy for Watchmen. I was so nervous. And I was like, Cord, I want to introduce myself. I love your film. I saw it tonight. It was amazing. And he was like, what are you?
That's the Jeffrey Wright movie?
Yeah.
Or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, it's all. I heard it's awesome.
It's so funny. It's so funny, and he was like, "What are you know, what are you doing here?" I was like, "Oh, I have a short film." He's like, "What?" He was just so generous with his time. He was, listen, this business is so lonely and so crazy making, and you constantly feel like, who would want to watch my thing? Who? Why would somebody care? Who would watch this? Who would talk to me? Who would call me back? Why? I'm a loser. It's like this business.
All the time. All the time.
This business will make you insane. And then you're at this thing, this film festival, and this guy you admire, whose work you're obsessed with, is being so generous. It's so welcoming. You can't. That kindness and generosity. And I met Kelly Freeman Craig, who did Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Which I heard is great.
Oh my God, it's so good. And she was so kind. I just like Andrew Ahn, who directed Fire Island. These are just heroes of mine. And I've met them at these events and these screenings. And I just can't, it's the opposite of what this business does to you 99% of the time.
Well, Mickey, the feature film that you're going to direct next and write.
Yes.
I'm just putting stuff out there. I'm putting it out into the ether.
I have a feature that I would really love to direct this year. Nothing like this. It's actually a thriller. But I wrote it and I have a great producer and I would love to make it. I'm just praying we get this Oscar nomination and that helps us get some money and some actors, some fancy actors to make this movie.
I was fishing with nothing on the line. I was just assuming that you were going to have a feature written and potentially direct because you did such a kick-ass job on this one. So I have no prior knowledge of your intentions to do a feature or having written a feature. But Mickey, if you need somebody there to do some behind the scenes.
I should be so lucky. Just please.
Mickey, I'm always rooting for you, man. You were so kind to us, Heidi and I on set.
Thank you for being there. And
amazing.
Just caring about this little thing, you know, like, it's amazing. The support is unbelievable.
Well, that's what we built Geekscape for. Mm. It's now Deepscape, I think, for Jim there in New York. And these are the conversations I love to have and share with you guys. So share this with your friends. Subscribe. Do all the things. Yeah. And, of course, follow Mickey. He's on Instagram. That's where we DM each other. Yeah. And you can learn more about the Anne Frank gift shop. They also have an Instagram.
Yes, at the Anne Frank gift shop.
You might want to give that one back.
I laugh. I'm like, I can't believe at the Anne Frank gift shop was available. But I got
they
it.
They may actually need the PR firm from the film.
I promise I will give it back if they ask. If they ask, they can have it back.
Mickey, thank you for at least taking the time to talk Geekscape.
Oh my God. Thank you.
You're the best.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Love you, man. We have our fingers crossed for you and Geekscape is cross your fingers as well for Mickey and gets that nomination. Much love. Come back anytime. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Geekscapists. You can reach me on all the socials. You can find Geekscape on all the socials. Come talk to us over on the Facebook, Geekscape Forever group, all that stuff. And if you love this conversation, share it with your friends. Till next week, over and out. Heidi made tacos, so I'm going to go eat some.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.